There's this sort of famous convocation speech by David Foster Wallace called This is Water. And in there, he talks about how everybody worships something. There are no atheists in the world, right? We all worship something. Part of being educated is figuring out what you want to worship. And I've thought about that so much as dean, is like, whatever we emphasize, whatever we're, you know, really focused on, in his language, this is what we're worshiping. And I think we're thinking about the right things. And I'm really proud of that, that we sort of have a community that's really thinking about the importance of the individual, about service, about making the world a better place. You can hear it in the way I talk about the law school, that that's what we think about. That's the way we think about what we're doing.
Today on Law Next, D. Gordon Smith, who has announced he is stepping down as dean of BYU Law School at the end of this year. Appointed dean in May 2016, Smith is the school's second longest-serving dean and someone who vowed early on to make the law school one of the most innovative in the country. I was at the law school last week in Provo, Utah, and I had the opportunity to sit down with Smith in his office to reflect on his 6.5 years as dean. This is Smith's third time on this podcast. I previously interviewed him in 2019 and 2021. We'll get to that interview in just a moment, but first, let's hear about the sponsors whose generosity supports this podcast. The immigration form-filling process needs to be virtually error-free. Save your firm a costly mistake with LolliLaw's native form-filling feature, LolliForms. With LolliForms, your firm can be equipped with the industry's largest collection of USCIS, DOJ, and EOIR forms, updated within an hour of the official release. You'll always have access to the latest form versions, reducing the risk of filing errors. Improve the accuracy of your form-filling process and simplify your immigration practice today. Check out LolliLaw right now at lollilaw.com. Now on to my interview with Gordon Smith. I am here in Provo, Utah, on the campus of BYU Law School, where I am sitting with the dean of the law school, Gordon Smith, who's become kind of like one of those return Saturday Night Live hosts. He's been on my podcast twice before, I think, and this is a third time. So, Gordon, good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for inviting me.
Good to see you. Well, and thanks for having me out to the law school. I was speaking here today, and it's great to be here. Something major that's changed since the last time that we talked is that you've announced that you're stepping down as dean at the end of this semester. And you didn't have to step down at this point. So why have you decided to do that?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot. My wife says it's because we met all of the goals, but I think it's really just a feeling that the law school goes better if we have deans for shorter stints who are really intensely pursuing things they think are important and then, you know, turning it over to the next dean. I liken it sometimes to a 400-meter race. You know, one person can run that race, but it's almost always faster if you have a 4x100, right? If you have four people running shorter stints, and there's obviously a little cost to handing off the baton in those races, but I think it's better for the law school if we have people who serve for a short time and really intensely go after what they want.
Yeah. I honestly never knew that deans largely have terms, essentially. And you told me that one time when I was talking to you, and that was news to me. But you started in this job in May of 2016,
right,
for your first five-year term, and you're now relatively midway, I guess, through your second term. And in reading about this announcement, there was a quote from you in which you said that the past 6.5 years have been the most challenging and rewarding years of my professional life. What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced coming into this
term? Yeah, well, one big challenge, of course, was the pandemic, which we were just discussing because you were here when we shut down in 2020. And I think that transition from sort of normal law school life into remote law school was incredibly challenging in every way. And we did, of course, like everybody else, we moved to remote learning and had to figure out the grading for that semester and all of that. We also, at that time, if you remember, we had the debate about the bar examination, and we went to the Utah Supreme Court and talked to them about doing a diploma privilege emergency order, which they did. And that turned out to be, I think, a great experiment with alternative pathways to licensure. But that was pretty intense. And then, of course, we had in 2020 the murder of George Floyd and all of the repercussions from that. And I think that made life in law school particularly challenging because I think we were all dealing with issues relating to race and policing in a way that was really more salient than it had ever been.
Yeah, it is really remarkable. As you said, I was here March of 2020, March 12th and 13th of 2020, and so much has changed about the world since then. How did it work out for you in the law school? You know, how difficult was that transition to virtual and hybrid and then to virtual? And then are you fully back from hybrid at this point, or where are
you? Yeah, we're pretty much operating like we were before. I think we have a little more confidence doing some remote options. One of the things we learned was that our students much preferred to be in person. In the fall of 2020, our first year classes were all in person, unless the professor had, you know, a special reason to do it remotely. So almost all of those classes were in person, and the students really preferred that option. But we now offer some classes remotely, and I think we learned from our experience in 2020 and 2021 how to do that more effectively.
Yeah, I know that one of your passions as dean has been to expand the law school's footprint on a global scale, in a sense, and I know that that's something that you've been able to do. You're probably hindered a little bit because of the pandemic in doing that, but you've been able to do that again more recently. So what is, where are you with that? What's happening with that kind of growth?
So we feel very strongly that our law school is well-positioned to be a global law school. Many of our students have international experience by the time they come to law school because of their missionary service for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So we have probably about 80% of our student body who have lived outside the United States before they've come to law school. About three quarters of our students speak at least two languages. And so our students are interested and sort of well positioned to do something outside the U.S.
Yeah. And something, if I understand it correctly, one maybe a side benefit of the pandemic and of having to teach classes virtually is that you're now able to engage with some of those students in a hybrid fashion when
exactly.
they're off in some locations overseas,
yes.
And yet they're able to participate in classes.
So this
here.
Semester we have students in London, Geneva, and Dubai, and those students are doing externships in each of those places, but they're also taking classes from the law school. It does mess with our scheduling a little bit because we have to figure out when the students will be logging in and make sure they're going to be awake when the class is happening. But we've managed to figure that out, and I think we'll be expanding to other countries next year and pretty rapidly in the future.
Yeah. I mentioned that quote a moment ago that these 6 years have been the most challenging and rewarding of your professional life. What's the rewarding part?
Yeah, I think the rewarding part is that when you're a dean, you have the ability to, I think, put your ideas into the real world in a way that's a little bit harder. When you're a professor, you command the resources of the law school in a way that allows you to do some things. I think one of the big rewards, which would be interesting to you, I know, is the stuff we've done with technology. The creation of a legal design clinic, which we call LawX, our legal technology initiative. I think we have done much better in that than we were doing 6 years ago, 7 years ago. We have a long way to go still, but I think that's been rewarding to see that. And I think the global programs that we've done, it's been rewarding to see that take shape. And then just the overall sort of improvement of the law school. We've seen a hiring of a lot of great professors. The credentials of our students have increased. More firms are hiring from BYU than ever before. And so that's pretty fun to see.
Yeah. You've heard me quote you before because I was here back when I was here in 2017, way back then, I think it was, maybe a later meeting. But I've written about this because you said, I want BYU to be known as, if not the most innovative law school in the country, then one of the most innovative law schools in the country.
Yes.
So how do you think you did on that?
Well, we've tried a lot of stuff. Not all of it worked, but I think a lot of it worked. I think LawX really worked. We have a program for our first years called the Academies Program that's just been off the charts success, I think. So all of our students at the end of their first year have an opportunity to participate in Academy, which is themed. I run the Startups Academy. And so I take a group of students to Silicon Valley every spring. Wilson Sonsini hosts us there. We do some training. We show students what it's like to live and work in Silicon Valley. And it's been really transformative for a lot of students in thinking about what they want to do with their law degree.
Yeah, it was interesting to me this morning. I met with some students in the tech group. I forget what
yes,
it was called.
It's called spelled Light. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, again, when I was been here a couple of times over the years, but that first time was in 2017, where I actually sat in on the Law X class that year. That I think it was the first year of that class. And I remember talking to students then, and there was one, I think, who at that point expressed an interest in kind of tech as a career. And that one has gone on to tech as a career, George Simons, who's got
yes.
a company called Solosuit, which came out of LawX and BYU. But it was interesting this morning how many more students, it seems like, are now thinking about sort of alternative careers with their law degrees. Is that something you've seen as well?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I looked recently at the most common majors that are coming to the law school, and it's shifted over the last 6 years. So if you'd looked 6 or 7 years ago, our most common major would have been political science, and the second would have been English, which are really traditional pre-law majors. Now we have many more coming out of accounting, out of STEM programs, and I think people are saying, I can combine some knowledge I gained as an undergraduate with some legal knowledge and really do something terrific. I think we need to move even more in that direction. I would love to see more STEM students come to the law school, particularly in computer science and technology majors. I think that combination would be outstanding, and the legal profession really needs those people.
Yeah. What are you going to be doing next?
I'm going to take a leave next year and sort of rekindle my research agenda, and then I'll be back in the classroom in the fall of 2014. So I'm planning to be a regular faculty member, but of course I'll be promoting some of the things we've done. We have a leadership initiative that I hope to remain involved with, the technology stuff I hope to remain involved with, and the Global Law School stuff. So all the stuff I was doing as dean, I hope to support as a faculty member.
And what's the process for finding somebody to succeed you?
So it's a quite a long process. I announced that I'd be stepping down in September, and we're right now on the cusp of having that decision. The decision ultimately will get made by the Board of Trustees with the recommendation of the law faculty and the university. And we're at the university stage in that right now. They've got the files, and they'll be doing interviews. And we're hoping in April that we'll hear.
I'm curious what advice you have for whoever it is who comes into this job after you. I mean, what most maybe surprised you about the job of a dean, and what would you want that person to know?
Yeah. I think the thing that surprised me most was how important culture is to the organization, to the law school. I think as a professor, I was used to teaching my own classes, writing my own papers, and sort of being in my own little bubble. And I didn't pay as much attention to what was happening outside that bubble as I did when I was the dean. And one of the things we spent a lot of time on during my deanship was just trying to get everyone in the law school on the same page in terms of our mission and what we wanted to accomplish. And I think innovation is a big part of that mission. I think we felt like the world needs change, and we're in a position to provide some of it.
Yeah. What do you think are the chances that some of that traction you've achieved in terms of teaching about innovation and tech could be lost with a new dean? I mean, how much has that become kind of ingrained at this point, and how much is that dean dependent?
Yeah. I mean, I think BYU's always had an innovative streak. So I think it's sort of part of our DNA, and maybe we amplified it a bit during the last few years, but I don't expect that it will be lost, because innovation ultimately is coming from the community. It's not just the dean, and I can sort of be the cheerleader for innovation, but a lot of the innovation was happening in the staff, faculty, students of the law school. And I think we've put in programs and structures that are likely to just continue to facilitate innovation. So I'm not too worried about that.
In recent months, several elite law schools, including Yale, Harvard, Stanford, Georgetown, and Berkeley, made the controversial announcement that they would no longer participate in the U.S. News & World Report's law school rankings. During Smith's term as dean, BYU Law saw its rankings rise from 46th to 23rd. So what does Smith think of the rankings overall and of these schools' decision to pull out? I'll ask him about that in just a moment. But first, let's hear about the sponsors who so generously support Law Next. What's the key to maximizing your immigration firm's cash flow? Offering the widest range of payment options in the industry, using LollyLaw's built-in online payment processor, Lolly Payments. Easily set up automated payment plans and accept payments via SMS text, QR code, or the client portal. Your clients can also benefit from paying you in convenient ways with credit cards, ACH, or e-checks at industry-low transaction rates. Getting paid faster has never been easier with LollyLaw. Visit lollylaw.com to learn more. Welcome back to Law Next. During his term as dean of BYU Law, Gordon Smith helped drive a major rise in the school's rankings, more than tripled its scholarships to students, introduced a number of innovative teaching and experiential programs, and oversaw its shutdown and eventual return thanks to COVID. In the second half of our conversation, and as he now prepares to step down at the end of this year, we talk more about his accomplishments and the lessons he learned about being a dean. Well, let's get back to that conversation. Something else that has, I think, come to the forefront more in the couple of years since we last spoke is the whole process of law school rankings. And, you know, more recently, some pretty prominent law schools have essentially rejected that notion of at least of the U.S. News rankings. What are your thoughts on that? And where is BYU Law on all of that?
Yeah. Well, the rankings, they can be part of the challenge and they can be part of the reward of deaning. And it's a reward if it goes up and everybody's saying great things. It's a challenge when they go down. My own view is that from the very beginning, I have thought of BYU as a top 25 law school. The rankings weren't really reflecting that when I became the dean, and that was puzzling to me. I said, we need to pay more attention to it. My first year when the rankings came out, we were 46. And I was like, that's a long way from top 25, which is the way I thought of us. So I think they spurred some real changes here in our career development office, in our admissions office, and other places in our operation, not just for the purpose of improving our rankings, but for the purpose of helping our students. So we weren't really focused so much on increasing our rankings as we were as improving the students and then what we did for the students. And along the way, we ended up improving the credentials of our students, improving their bar passage, improving their employment, and the rankings sort of naturally followed. So this past year, we were ranked 23rd.
Congratulations.
Yeah, somebody said, if you go up 23 more, you'll be number one. And I said, and I said, well, that'll have to be the next dean. But what we focused on were things that should do well under any rankings regime. I largely agreed with the deans who were opting out of the rankings on the effects of the rankings. And
being what? What were they?
So I think what they were most concerned about were the factors in the rankings that dealt with expenditures per student, that there was an incentive to just spend money, not necessarily to help students, because actually the spending on students was discounted in the rankings. It was spending on faculty and facilities and programs, and to not really think about law student debt all that much, although U.S. News did recently introduce debt load into the rankings and then lost it. They're going to lose it in this next version, which I think is too bad. Public interest, I think, was probably discouraged in the rankings, just the way U.S. News counted employment. And we, for example, have always done public interest law fellowships, and those had been discounted until this coming year. So I think there were a lot of pieces of the rankings that needed to be improved, and I'm really grateful to the deans at Yale and Harvard and other schools that sort of brought that to the forefront.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that issue of public interest, I mean, you already mentioned the fact that students are coming here with a broader range of career interests and backgrounds coming into the school. I do seem to recall, and I may not be remembering this correctly, but that at a conversation you and I had a couple of years back, most students were still primarily interested in law firm, careers and larger law firm careers, probably. Is that still the case, or are you seeing any different interest in, say, public interest types of jobs?
A lot of students want to start there. I mean, partly they sense there's some good training to be had at big law firms and some experiences. Now, one of the things that's interesting about BYU is the debt load of our graduates is very low comparatively. So last year, our average indebtedness was we were number one in the country, and we had an average indebtedness in the mid-40s. So most of our students aren't required to go to big law firms to pay off a huge debt. About 35% of our students have no debt at all when they graduate.
Why is that?
Because our tuition's very low and we're very generous in scholarshiping the students. Yeah. So I think BYU is actually sort of an interesting study in what student preferences are in the absence of debt load. If you see a law school where a lot of the students are going to big law, it may be more than just that they have the opportunity to go to big law. It may be that they're required to go to big law to pay off substantial indebtedness. So I think a lot of our students will do other things. I mean, we do have students who go to prosecutor's offices, for example, and they're able to do that and pay off their student loans because they either have none or they have a very small amount of student loans. But I think that big law firms are still attractive, and Utah has been getting an influx of large law firms lately, and our students have been really excited about that.
Yeah, that's been interesting to see.
Yeah.
In the announcement of your leaving, I think said that under your guidance, BYU Law tripled the amount of scholarships for students.
We did, yeah.
Is that true?
Actually, 3.5 times, yeah.
So how does that happen? Is that through fundraising? And does that mean you're... I guess part of the job of dean is out there beating the bushes for money?
Yeah, part of it's fundraising. Part of it's allocating discretionary funding that we already have to that purpose rather than to other purposes. As we talked about how to improve the law school, I think a lot of us felt like the most important thing was to get great students in the door, and that a lot of other things flowed from that. The classroom experience would be better. The bar passage and employment would be better. So the inputs really matter in how the outputs turn out, but we just felt like that was a good place to allocate money. And I will say we also thought about student debt, because the student debt was higher than I thought it should be when I became the dean, and we've reduced it by about $20,000 per student in the last 7 years, which I'm really proud of.
That's amazing. Something that I know that you and I have talked about before, and that I've talked to David Armand here about before, is the law and corpus linguistics program. For anybody listening to this podcast who's not familiar with that, could you, I mean, that was something that I think you helped pioneer that program, and it's become probably the leading one. Well, it was the first in the country. So
I think
it was leading from the start.
I think we're definitely the leader in law and corpus linguistics. It's a small field, so a little easier to be the leader than it would be in some other places. But I think sort of big data applied to the interpretation of language. And that's the essence of law and corpus linguistics, is that we're using big databases of texts that are searchable so that you can see how words are used in context. So rather than just thinking about word meaning in the abstract or by consulting a dictionary, you can essentially become your own lexicographer and see how words are used by people in their actual discourse.
Yeah. And there have been conferences and courses. And again, I was just talking to David beforehand. He was telling me about a number of ways in which getting new corpi, is that the word?
Corpora.
into there to continue to expand that.
It's amazing how many resources are available. And a lot of people around the country have come to us because we have the platform to do the search. We have an amazing search engine. And so now what people are doing is bringing their text to us and saying, can we get this, you know, searchable on your search engine? Because there are a lot of features on there that people are interested in.
Yeah. You know, there's that, Irish saying, may you live in interesting times. And I guess your deanship has been in interesting times, as you said. Something else that's happened just over the last couple of years while you've been dean is the decision by the Utah Supreme Court to launch this deregulation sandbox. That's not what they're calling it.
I think they're actually talking about it, re-regulation.
Re-regulation. Okay, re-regulation sandbox.
Yeah.
And with a goal toward loosening some of the previous restrictions on who can own law practices, who can deliver legal services in order to address access to justice. What has been your philosophy and what the role should be of the law school and of you as dean of the law school in helping to address that issue of access to justice, or even to in helping to serve the community in which this law school is situated?
I think law schools can have a big role here. I was on the task force that created the sandbox, and I'm a corporate lawyer by training. It wasn't a sort of area that I had put a lot of energy into before I was on the task force. But once I was on the task force and we wrote the report, I really became impassioned about this issue. And it's one of the things we hoped for from Law X was that it would generate some enthusiasm for access to justice through technology. And so what we hope we can provide is, I would say, twofold. We're hoping to start an incubator so that we can actually help to incubate some ideas and companies that will go into the sandbox at some point. That's a plan for the near future. But maybe more broadly, we're hoping to infect our students with the idea that they can make a difference through their ideas in bringing the justice system to ordinary people. I mean, frankly, it doesn't take much change to make a difference because the justice system is so poor at it right now. I mean, the hurdle is pretty low for somebody to make an intervention and make a difference in the world. And I think we see that with some of the interventions we've done through Law X, but also in the Utah sandbox on issues relating to expungement, for example. I think we've made some great progress in Utah over the last few years, mostly through technological changes, but also through some policy changes and, you know, sort of structural changes in the way we think about that issue. I think we're blessing the lives of a lot of people, and that's really a meaningful thing.
Yeah, and we talked earlier today at the presentation I did about that study that came out of Stanford that kind of looked at the data for the first time and found that, in fact, the Utah program was exceeding the Arizona program in the sense of enhancing access to justice and serving the needs of those who do not otherwise have access to legal services.
I'll just say that the gap is big enough that almost anything you do is going to, you know, help close it. Like, I mean, it really almost any idea you have, almost any area you might think I might want to make a contribution there, there's opportunity. So this is sort of a golden age, I think, for people who might want to be entrepreneurial with law and say, hey, I can make a difference. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit out there, I think, in terms of access to justice. And so it's one of the things I'm trying to get our students excited about. And, you know, don't just become a line worker in a factory. Go out and do something that makes the world better.
Yeah. I know you're going to have a lot of time for reflection over the next year after you step away from this job. But at this point, as you sit here, have you thought about, is there anything you wished you had done differently or that now, with the benefit of hindsight, you would have done differently during the last 6.5 years?
Yeah. I don't live much in the world of regret. Good. I find that it's not a very valuable use of my time. So I haven't even thought about that question. I'm sure there are things I would do differently if I were in the position I'm in now. I will say that one of the things I learned as dean that I don't think I appreciated much before I became the dean, because I hadn't been in a position where I was in management, for lack of a better term, right? Where I was somebody's boss, or dealing with a lot of employees. And I think one of the things I learned as the dean, and it took me a while to learn it, and I'm glad that I did learn it, was the importance of dealing with each individual as an individual. They're, you know, people aren't just widgets. They're not just parts in a system. They're not just numbers. They're not, you know, every individual has their own challenges and own values, their own things that they're dealing with. And so we've tried, I think, in doing law school, to making law school better with the faculty, staff, students of the law school, to really, we're small enough, I think we can take an individualized approach. And that's just been a valuable life lesson for me, is that if you sort of start from a place where you value and respect the people around you, everything gets better, right? If you start from a place where you're just trying to deal with people in a sort of generic way where you're not really paying attention, where you're not really listening to what's going on in their lives, everything gets worse. And so, you know, I think the importance of that has really been driven home during my time as dean. I'll say it's very time consuming to do it. And I don't always do it right. But when we do it right, it's noticeably better.
Yeah. I asked you at the outset about some of what you found rewarding about the position. Was there anything else that you're particularly proud of, you know, as you step out of this role?
I think I'm most proud of the community. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm around here for the law school and for our mission. We drafted a new mission statement for the law school 2 years ago, and that sort of allowed the community to come together and sort of think about what is it we value? What do we care about? And that was a great experience. I will recommend to people, if you haven't seen it, there's this sort of famous convocation speech by David Foster Wallace called This Is Water. And in there, he talks about how everybody worships something. There are no atheists in the world, right? We all worship something. And that part of being educated is figuring out what you want to worship. And I've thought about that so much as dean, is like, whatever we emphasize, whatever we're, you know, really focused on in his language, this is what we're worshiping. And I think we're thinking about the right things. And I'm really proud of that, that we sort of have a community that's really thinking about the importance of the individual, about service, about making the world a better place. You can hear it in the way I talk about the law school, that that's what we think about. That's the way we think about what we're doing.
Yeah. Is that what's in the mission statement? I mean, what's...
It is, yeah. You know, that's, it talks about different roles that we play and as lawyers. And the first one, which often surprises people, is healer, that lawyers are healers. And I think a lot of people don't see lawyers as healers. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we wanted to convey to our community is that there's a lot of pain in the world. And we are in a position where we can heal some of that pain, and we should be about that.
Yeah. I think a lot of solo and small firm lawyers understand that well, because they have a lot of people who come in their office just to be heard and just
Absolutely.
To talk. And
Absolutely.
Maybe you can't do anything for them. But
yeah.
Well, I know that I am standing between you and a faculty meeting here, and I'm cognizant of our time. But anything else that you'd like to mention before we wrap up?
I hope it's okay if I do this, but I want to thank you for the contributions you made to the law school. I still remember the first time you came and talked about the duty of technology competence. And I turned to Sean Nevers, who's just recently been announced as the new director of our library. And I said, is this a real thing? How come I've never heard of this?
Yeah.
And I after your talk, we went away and we had a meeting and said, okay, if that's a real thing, we should figure out what we're doing about it, because I think right now we're not doing anything about it. Yeah. And that really prompted our legal technology initiative. So thank you for doing that and for your repeated visits and contributions to the law school and to the intellectual life of the law school.
Yeah, well, thank you. And you were actually a little more ahead than you're giving yourself credit for, because the Law X program had already started at that point when I was here.
Yeah.
So, because I remember that was the visit in which I sat in on the class. So that was already going, if nothing else.
Well, at least we had words after you came to describe what we were trying to do.
Yeah,
I was like,
good. Well, Gordon, it's been a real honor to get to know you over the last few years, and I hope we continue to stay in touch,
even as you
step out of this role. But congratulations on everything you've done here, and best wishes on the next phase of your career.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks to Gordon Smith for the opportunity to let me sit down with him in his office at BYU Law and reminisce about his deanship. Best wishes to him on the next phase of his career, and congratulations on everything he accomplished during his years as dean. If you would like to share your own thoughts or comments on today's show, please do so by tweeting us at LawNextPodcast or by emailing me directly, ambrogi@gmail.com. LawNext is produced, engineered, and edited by Populous Radio. I'm your host, Bob Ambrogi. I hope you'll join us again next time for another episode of Law Next.